Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Well, do you ever feel like you don't know your child anymore? Maybe they used to be a sweet kid who loved spending time with you and snuggling up with you. Then suddenly they developed an aversion to anything that had anything to do with a parent. Well, my guest for today says that entering middle school is a little bit like stepping onto another planet, both for you and for your child. It's a time where peer pressure and technology and hormones start to wreak havoc in your child's life, damaging not only your relationship with them, but some of their relationships as well. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest for today and his new book, Planet Middle School. Dr. Kevin Lehman is a New York Times bestselling author, psychologist, radio and television personality, educator, and speaker who's taught and entertained audiences worldwide with his common sense psychology. And he's written more than 50 books about marriage, family issues, including the Birth Order book, Sheet Music, Making Children Mind Without Losing Yours, and Have a New Kid by Friday. Dr. Lehman and his wife, Sandy, live in Tucson, Arizona. They have 5 children and 2 grandchildren. Welcome, Dr. Lehman.
Hey, good to be with you again. Thanks.
It's great to have you here. So your new book, I was telling you on the phone that I'd already read Planet Middle School when it came across my desk to say, let's interview about this. And I was wholeheartedly agreed because it has so much great information in it. It's a book for parents to kind of help us understand these creatures who've taken over the minds and bodies of our once sweet children. Why are middle school children so challenging?
Well, because there's metamorphosis right before your eyes where, to quote my wife, who I call Mrs. Uppington, that's my affectionate name for my bride of many, many years. She says the 11-year-old girl is the worst creature walking the planet. And about age 11, and they start early now, you know, kids get into pubescence and early adolescence, and like your intro said, you've got hormones, you've got peer pressure, you've got so many things working against you as a parent. It's time to, you know, strap on your seatbelt and get ready for a wild ride down the rapids of life, because this is not a time for the faint at heart. This is a time for parents to stand up, be the parents they need to be, and realize these little weird creatures who, like you say, will cuddle up one day and you'll get whatever and act like they don't even want a parent when the peer group's around. You got to be able to finesse that somehow and remain the mom or dad you need to be and help the kids negotiate those rough rapids, because it is tough on them, but it's tough on parents too.
Well, and that's what I loved about your book, is it really does help explain what's going on with them, but it also gives parents some tips on how to navigate through all these changes that are taking place. People tell us that they're going to happen, but you don't really believe it until you're right in the thick of it. Is that common among most parents?
Oh, sure. The kids get snarly. They get quiet. In fact, here's an interesting comparison. You know, as a guy who's written 52 books, I'd have to tell you that some of them, Jill, are more fun to write than others, okay? And one of them that I had so much fun writing is a book called Have a New Husband by Friday. It's not one to suggest you dump your husband, ladies. It's one to show you how the words you choose to use with your husband can change his entire attitude, approach to marriage and family. And parenting. And one of the commonalities between kids in the middle school years and us men is this: we hate your questions. We don't like the why word. And what do mommies, especially mommies, like to do? They love to ask their kids questions. So if you want to bury your kid a little deeper in that room that they hide out in many times, just keep drilling them with questions, parents, and they won't come out.
Why is that such a challenge for middle school kids especially?
Because they're pulled. They're still little girls. They're still little boys. They still like their toys. They still like their little dolls. And yet they're growing up. And what are they bombarded with? Growing up way, way, way too quick. And so it's a pull both ways. So it's a time, like I say, where in many ways they wish they didn't have a parent around because everything seems to bother them. But they wake up in the morning and they got a big zit on their face too. And that's a new experience. And then by this time, they've certainly been aware of the opposite sex and go through those little puppy love relationships, and it just gets really weird. So the smart parent, again, learns to keep their mouth shut, doesn't ask questions. In fact, for those of you who are saying right now, that is impossible, I have to ask my kid questions, then frame things like this. Honey, can I ask your opinion about something? Now, when you ask someone for your opinion, what do you literally say? You're saying, I value what you think. I'm interested in what your ideas are. So you won't get much pushback on, can I ask your opinion? It's a great opener.
Well, and it does show them that we think they know something, too, does it not?
Yeah, and that's a big assumption. Because they're learning. I mean, quite frankly, I mean, I want people to take this in the true spirit of what it's given. Kids are dumb as mud. I mean, if you're offended by that, call your insurance agent and ask he or she this question. Why do I pay so much money for my 16-year-old to drive a car? And the agent will say in one form or another, because they do dumb things. And that's why you pay more money. So that's why God gave us parents, to help guide the sheep. You know, you just don't wail with the sheep on the side of the head. There's times when you got to move those little sheep along. But the rod, you know, basically was used to, you know, thy rod and thy staff, they what? They comfort me. And so you have to have enough guidelines in your family so that you don't fall prey to UPSing each of your children to a far-off land. You've got to deal with the cards you've been dealt, and it does take some finesse on the part of us parents.
So, Doctor,
you just follow your feelings. With these kids, if you just follow your feelings, chances are you'll change your kid's name to Isaac and try to kill him on the spot.
I do sometimes wonder how my parents made it through. One of the times I think often about my parents is when I'm driving my middle schooler somewhere, and the silence is quite deafening. And I remember being in the car with my own mom. She drove me everywhere and to every activity, thinking the silence was also deafening. So what can be done to help that situation or help parents understand that maybe the silence is okay?
Well, silence, number one, is great. Let's take the other extreme, too. When a kid pops in a CD into your car and he turns it up and it's really loud, try this, parent. Turn to your son or daughter and say, honey, turn that up, would you? It's already loud. Say, turn it up. And it, make a fool of yourself. Dance a little behind the wheel, you know. Say, wow, you must really like that group. I'll tell you, I know you probably don't have time now. You're busy listening, but sometimes I'd love to hear about that group. In other words, you find ways, parents, of entering your child's world. Your kid comes home from school. Hi, honey. How was your day today? Fine. What'd you do in school today? Nothing. Save your breath. Most kids will go to their bedroom and text their buddies like a woodpecker that's got a bad case of ADHD, and they will systematically just shut you out of their life. So you have to engage them, but how you engage them, you do a little differently than what normal conversation would be like.
So what's a way to engage our children when it seems like they don't want to engage with us?
Well, you say, well, I can tell you're not in a talkative mood. So you know what? I'm just going to put on this old-fashioned station, listen to some oldies. if you're driving in the car. You know, give the kid the right to stay not engaged, and chances are they'll, guess what, engage. In fact, they always say, don't try this at home. And I'm going to tell parents to try this at home. If you have access to a 3-, 4-, 5-year-old kid, just try this sometime. It's just fun. Extend your hands, your arms toward the child, okay, and say, come here. Now, that's a command. Come here. Chances are the kid will go south. If you want the kid to come toward you, walk backwards slowly and say the same words, come here. And chances are the kid will approach you. So psychologically, that's sort of your stance with these kids during these weird years. Your arms are always open and always ready to talk, but you don't force it.
In fact,
your kid looks down. You say, wow, honey, you look like you had a rough day. That's all. You make a comment. They may follow it up or they may not. Either way, you've opened the door for conversation. But you're making a statement and not asking a question.
You also write that you're supposed to be like Denny's and be open 24/7. Talk a little bit more about that as it applies to what you just mentioned.
Well, when kids want to talk, I got news for you. They're going to talk. And it might be past bedtime when they want to talk. We had one daughter, I'm telling you, I remember she was sort of a night owl in many ways, but she'd come in 11 o'clock at night. I mean, I like to go to bed at 9:30. I'm an early go-to-bed guy, and my wife, of course, is half raccoon. She's up half the night. But I can still remember saying, Holly, this has been really great, but I need to go to bed now, because she'd talk your ear off. And what usually happened at that point was, if I couldn't stay awake, just moved over to the other side of the bed to talk with her mother. Well, I snored away like a hibernating bear, you know. But nevertheless, that's why I say the 24/7 rule applies, because you got to be ready to talk to kids. You got to hear them out. And, it's just a natural thing. You know, as a parent now, our youngest is 23. What I can tell parents is this. What's really great is when you find out your kids really do love you. They want to spend time with you when they don't have to. And they'll spend a lot of money to be all together as a family. So what is it that ends up with that kind of a family? It's a lot of work on your part, but a listening ear is always a part of it.
We'll be open 24/7. That's one of the tips from Dr. Kevin Lehman in his book, Planet Middle School. We're talking about how to communicate with your middle schooler, even though they seem like they might be on a different planet. We'll have more great advice and more tips along the way with Dr. Kevin Lehman coming up on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Today I'm talking with Dr. Kevin Lehman about his new book, Planet Middle School, Helping Your Child Through the Peer Pressure, Awkward Moments, and Emotional Drama. We've been talking a little bit about how to communicate with this strange creature that now inhabits our house. And Dr. Lehman, one of the other things that you mentioned is that sometimes they don't really want to be around you anyway. So what do we do? Do we just kind of let them go, or how do we deal with that?
Well, it's called freedom with limits. You do let kids go. You realize that a kid's idea of a great time isn't sitting with mom and dad at that age. They're experiencing life. They want to go out and be with their friends. But let's take the situation, and I take the situation because it happens so much, where the kid gets a little mouthy and you hear a little back talk. Now, what most parents do in that situation is they become the instant authoritarian, okay? Now, keep in mind that Almighty God is not an authoritarian. The supreme authority, yes, but not an authoritarian. He doesn't grab us by the earlobe and twist it and tell us to acknowledge him. But his holy word says, every knee shall bow. So again, keep in mind we're talking about authority versus authoritarianism. So when a kid gets mouthy, most parents, from the authoritarian stance, say, all right, young lady, I've had it. All right, just for that, you're not going to that thing tonight. Now, that's one way of handling it. The better way of handling it is to be an authority. Wait till the child gets dressed for that event, whatever it is, and bushwhack them, blindside them. And when they say, come on, Mom, we got to go, you look at them with a blank stare and say, go where? What are we talking about? Well, no, I got to go over to, you know, my friend's house. We're going to have that thing tonight over there. Well, honey, I got news for you. The car's not going anywhere, and neither are you. What is wrong with you? I need to be there. You want to know what's wrong with me? I've still been working over that conversation we had earlier this morning. That's what's wrong with me. Turn your back and walk out of the room. You will have that kid on their backside. You have blindsided them beyond belief. And when the kid comes and apologizes, which is very predictable, you say, honey, I'm glad to see you could apologize. Well, Mom, can we go now? I'm going to be late. No, honey, I told you we're not going anywhere tonight. Now, that's giving your kid what I call vitamin N, which is no. And too many times a parent will say no, and then a kid in one manipulative way or another will get the parent to cave in. Well, that's how you create a very powerful child who feels like he has license or she has license to do anything they want in life. And that's not good parenting on your part, parent.
Talking about saying, you know, you want your
now,
child
could
to...
Could you do that? Could you do that?
I could do that. I think I've done that, actually. And it works quite well. But when you just say no, then they just come back and say, please, please. And then all of a sudden they're very nice. But it certainly works better the other way around.
It does, yeah.
But one thing I learned from your Parenting Your Powerful Child book is that parents are also supposed to say, forgive me if you are wrong. And that changes the way the child then reacts to you as well. I know that that's typical for middle schoolers as well. Why is that still so important?
Well, it puts balance in the relationship. See, no one member of the family is more important than the family. God doesn't love parents more than kids. In fact, if anybody wants proof of that, look at Paul's letter to the Italians over in Romans 3:23. It says, you know, each of us has sinned, each of us has fallen short of the glory of God. And we're in this thing together. So when you establish equality, now by equality, I'm not talking about sameness. Men and women are not the same. Children and adults are not the same. They're very different. But we're of equal social value. And so kids should get our respect. And as parents, we should get the respect from our children as well. But when you're dissed, rather than just strike out in anger, the principles that I lay out in books like Parenting Your Powerful Child or the book we're talking about today, Planet Middle School, they work really well because it keeps you disengaged to a level where the situation becomes the teacher to the child. And the situation being, okay, I ran my mouth off at my mom. Wow, did I learn a lesson there? You get disciplined and it doesn't feel good and you miss out on some fun. And that's a great way to shape a kid without being too authoritarian. Because if you just bring up kids in an authoritarian manner, they're going to rebel sooner or later. Mm. But the kicker is if you bring them up in a permissive arena where you just let kids do whatever they want, the interesting thing there is that in time, those kids will also bow their neck and go the other way, and rebellion will set in.
So it sounds apparent that we can't really control our child's actions, but if we can control our own actions and how we react to them, that is going to help us in the long run. Talk about the difference between that responding and reacting.
Well, you know, let's just say this. You know, in the heat of battle, it's hard to stop and say, what would Dr. Lehman suggest? Because quite frankly, your carnal self would like to kill your kid, okay, for what just happened. So, but the deal is this, that when you react, you say things that are really stupid, not helpful, and demeaning. And when you respond, you're just sort of calling a spade, and it's not quite the emotional flurry that exists when you react. For example, 9-year-old says at breakfast, "Mommy, I want a pony." "A pony? A pony?" She's got a deep voice. Where did you get an idea like that from? I'm telling you, if a bird had your brain, he'd fly sideways. What is wrong with you, a pony? I can't believe some of the things you come up with. Now, that is a reaction. Okay, and you just blow that little kid's candle out. He's 9 years old. I mean, what little 9-year-old didn't want a pony? I wanted a pony when I was a kid. And now, a way of responding. Same situation. "Mom, I want a pony." Wow, can you imagine having your own pony? Can you imagine riding your pony to school in the morning, past all the kids at the bus stop waving at them? The bell rings at school and all the kids go down to the cafeteria, but not you. You got to check on your pony outside. And 9-year-old says, "Yeah, Mommy, but we live in a 2-bedroom apartment. We can't have a pony here." Kid will figure it out. So, see, one of them is just responding to what the kid's saying. And part of that is granting fantasy, but you can't in reality. Wouldn't it be nice if we could go to Hawaii? That's a great idea. Of all the spots that you'd like to go the most, wow, have you ever done any reading about Hawaii? About the islands? You know, I mean, there's all kinds of conversation you could have about the Hawaiian islands. And still end up, the bottom line is, but honey, we don't have the money to go there. Maybe someday we'll be able to do that. Wouldn't that be cool? So I'm just saying, there's just ways of finessing the conversation to make these middle school years bearable, because they're going to give you a run from time to time. No two ways about it.
And sometimes they do have some fascinating ideas.
Do they ever? Trouble is, a lot of them cost money.
A lot of them cost money, but they might even have some great ideas about what they should be allowed to do.
Well, how about kids becoming, what's a good word, grateful? If there's one thing that middle school kids lack, is any sense of gratitude. I think the smart parent gets their kids to do things in the neighborhood for elderly people, or, you know, without payment, just to go out and do things. Kids today are on the take. They got their hand out at every turn. They grow up to feel like the world owes them a living, and that has to stop. The betterment of not only your family, but our country, for Pete's sake. Gratitude is really huge. You get a kid who's grateful for what they have, that kid's probably not going to be sporting an attitude around you very often.
Well, when we come back from our break, we're going to talk a little bit about entitlement and where our kids today are at in that, and how parents can help work them through that, work us through that as well. We're talking to Dr. Kevin Lehman today about his book, Planet Middle School, and you're listening to Connecting Faith. We do have a few copies of Dr. Lehman's book to give away. If you'd like to receive one, we'll put you in a drawing for that. You can just go to our website at myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and you'll be able to submit your name and your information that way. We'll let you know at the close of the show. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm thrilled to be talking to Dr. Kevin Lehman today about his book, Planet Middle School. I have a middle schooler, so this came in absolutely handy and very timely for our life here at the Bender household. Well, one of the quotes you have from your book, Dr. Lehman, says this when you're talking about worldview. It says, "Everything in media and culture is telling today's kids, you are the most important being on the planet. Many parents have already reinforced that worldview in their homes by putting kids' needs first, even before their spouses. But that can only lead to a destructive path. Kids who are all about me." So, Dr. Lehman, I wholeheartedly agree with that. I see it all the time. And plus, I teach at a college and I see that some students are still in that phase. So what can we do as parents to kind of help our middle schooler move very quickly through that phase?
Yeah, by the way, you mentioned the college age kids. They're not much better than younger kids. They're really not. I'm a former dean of students, and I saw that years ago coming. I remember thinking, wow, these student leaders are going to be our politicians someday and our leaders. And this goes way back. And I remember shaking my head just saying, our country's going to be in big-time trouble. And we're there now because of it. So it's been around for a long time. But I'll tell you something that I found of interest. The last two Christmases, we had Christmas Eve service at home. That's the first time we've ever done that in our life. And I was the speaker. I'm still upset over it. They didn't give me an honorarium. I thought I did a pretty good job. But everybody in the family participated. The grandchildren, all of our kids, everybody participated in the service. And then we went out into the Tucson area where we live, and we found homeless people. And we had made food for them during the day that we took out to them. We gave them envelopes with cash in them, hand warmers, gloves, woolen socks, all kinds of things. And it was great. It was great to do as a family, number one. It was great for my 12 and 10-year-old grandchildren to see that there are people who live in parks and live under benches. And in other words, again, I think you have to find creative ways to show people in your own family that you care about people other than your own family. And again, if you bring up your kid parent to feel like they're the centerpiece of the world, as most parents do in America today, where's the room for Almighty God in a kid's life? I'm not that smart, and I can answer that question. There's no room for God if you bring up your kid to feel like they're the centerpiece. So anyway, you just, you know, it's not rocket science. My wife always gives the grandchildren candy bars, and she likes to wrap them in a $10 bill. Mm-hmm. And she reminds them a $10 bill is for them to find someone to give it to who could really use it. And so we want to train kids early to be thinking about what? About other people. And if you do that successfully, you're going to end up with a pretty healthy kid at your hands.
Mm-hmm. So I was mentioning before the show that obviously some of these things have worked quite well for your family. When I look at the pictures, everyone seems to be smiling. They have grandkids that they're probably raising in the same way. So what would you suggest to those grandparents who have grandchildren that they maybe get to take part in molding as well?
You know what's funny about that? Grandparents buy a lot of Lehman books. You know, and they give them to their children because they're sort of shaking their head and wondering, why are they letting my grandchildren get away with that? So we see the permissiveness that reigns in our society. So again, grandparents, you got to remember, you try not to interfere. You give opinion when you're asked, and have fun with these grandchildren. You can be great teachers to your children and your grandchildren. If you want to come up with a great birthday gift or a Christmas gift sometime, make a video, grandparent, of your life. Set that little video camera up, and these days you can do it on a phone, and just talk to it. Mm-hmm. Talk to that little lens and talk about your life and where you grew up and when you came to faith or all the important landmarks in your life. Maybe the feelings you had as a youngster growing up, wondering if there really was a God. Things from the heart. If you want to give your kid a great gift, or your grandchild a great gift, there it is. In years after you've left this earth, I guarantee you those kids and those grandkids will be looking at those old videos and say, oh my goodness, look at grandpa, look at grandma. Mm. And they'll listen to those things over and over and over again. And they'll be encouraged every time they hear grandma or grandpa's voice or see their picture on that video.
Well, and it's true that if you've done your job right and you can get those children to kind of look outside themselves and care about other people, even their own relatives, then maybe they will be asking grandparents those questions. But I'm guessing that chances are those grandchildren don't realize until they're adults themselves what a valuable resource that would have to ask your grandparents about their own lives.
Absolutely. I mean, we all figure that out too late.
Mm-hmm.
We don't appreciate what we have. But what a great way to keep Grandma and Grandpa fresh in kids' mind than to lay down some great video for your children to enjoy.
My 10-year-old, I came home from the store, and my 10-year-old was sitting on the couch crying. And I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "Oh, I forgot about an assignment. I forgot about an assignment, and it's due tomorrow. It's a big assignment." And I said, "What is it?" And he said, "I have to call a grandparent and ask them about what it was like to be a 10-year-old. And I said, "Ouch. Well, you have some grandparents. It's 6:30. Yeah. Let's give them a call." And it was just the sweetest thing for him to call and ask those questions, and then to hear my mom tell these stories that I had not even heard of how she grew up and what she asked for Christmas and what they did for Christmas traditions. And his eyes lit up as well as he was able to hear about her. And so it was a great assignment. I commend the teachers of making that assignment. Of course, the original plan was to go sit down with your grandparent, but, well, he kind of forgot about that part. But my point is, grandparents have so much to offer, and it does help those kids to kind of think of their lives in a different way as well.
Well, they do. And I always said with pre-K, you know, nursery school and all that kind of stuff, have as many grandparents involved in that as you can. Grandparents are a great help to young kids. It seems like the young and the old go together rather nicely. And since I've talked to you last, we have a school out here, and Lehman Academy of Excellence, and it's a charter school. And it's been just wonderful to put together a school using my principles and watching this school just take off and thrive. We're mm-hmm. doubling in size. And we have a school that says no excuses from parents, from grandparents, or from kids. We hold people accountable. We have encouragement awards that get voted on every month in the classroom. We want kids to encourage one another, think of other people. I'm just telling you, it's possible. We're seeing it before our very eyes. We're going to build these schools all over the country, and I'm naive enough to think that maybe we can help make a dent in American education today, because everything seems to be off-centered.
Mm. Well, you know, you write a lot about schools in your book as well, and that we seem to have more options today as parents than we did when I was a child or when you were a child, that you just kind of went to the school that was part of your neighborhood. But now we do have the opportunity to look at who our child is and how they might fit best into a particular school. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, and in a very global sense, do you treat your kids differently? I mean, you'll train up a child in the way he should go. When he is old, he will not depart from it. You know, I love to point out to parents, train up, don't train down.
Hmm.
Most of us train down children. In the way he should go doesn't mean the way you think he should go. That's a surprise to parents. It really speaks to the individual bent of each of your children. So you might have kids in different schools. That's not always helpful in terms of the family calendar and vacations and things like that. But again, my big point there is make sure you treat your kids differently. So different bedtimes and different allowances and all those kind of things make all kinds of sense. I mean, God treats us different. He didn't give us all the same abilities and interests. I love to point out that twins, identical twins, you know, I mean, they're genetically the same person, but God decided to give them different fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
Why? To help the FBI? Or is this God's way of saying, you are my son, you are my daughter, you are different than everybody else? So, hey, parents, don't be afraid to bring one gift home for a kid. Everybody doesn't have to have a gift. When you go to a birthday party, bring the kid whose birthday it is, a present. You don't have to bring presents for the other kids in the family and all that. You women do that way, way, way too much. Hmm. Are you guilty of that one?
I admit that I have been to parties where everyone gets a gift.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's crazy.
It is a little bit crazy. I've also been to a lot of award ceremonies where everyone gets an award.
Yeah, I hate those. See, the Christian home, well, it ought to be a place where kids learn to fail. I know it doesn't sound right, but think about it. But when did people come to know the Lord? Did they come out of victory? I've never met one yet. They came out of failure. And so, you know, let the reality of the situation become a teacher to a child. And for that kid who forgot he had an assignment and didn't turn it in on time and got a zero for the day, that's a lesson learned. It's not the end of the world.
Hmm. Well, a lot of middle schoolers today, they do have so many opportunities to succeed and a few to fail as well. How can we as parents kind of help them navigate through that when they do get to the point where they have failed? How can we help them?
Well, I think the attitude, let me give you a contrast. A kid brings home all A's in a B, and you say, wow, looks like all that hard work you did this semester really paid off. Congratulations. Well, that's encouragement. Now, the parent who uses traditional means might say, hey, what's with the B?
Hmm.
You know, they found the flaw. Now, one is encouraging, one isn't. What about the kid who doesn't bring home good grades? What do you say when, you know, the kid's got a bunch of D's and F's? I mean, the first thing I'm going to say is, honey, I'm sorry you don't enjoy learning. This report card certainly is evidence of that. But as your parent, I happen to know you don't really give it much of a lick and a holler, so these grades are probably very consistent with the amount of effort you put into the classroom. And, you know, I was just talking to your teacher last week, and she had mentioned the fact that you might be in her class next year again.
Hmm.
And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, I don't think he's going to be promoted on to eighth grade. I think he's going to stay right here. Now, giving that kid that information is good information. Is it a threat or is it reality? It's not a threat. It's reality. So, honey, if you fail, I mean, kids who don't do well in school end up going to summer school lots of times. And what I'm saying is there's all kinds of life consequences just waiting there for your son or daughter. You don't have to pounce on them and magnify them and all that. Honey, I believe in you. I believe if you just applied yourself, you would do pretty good. So, again, it's really important for the kid to see this is your life. In one of my books, I talk about the fact when a kid is really just getting way out of hand, way mouthy, what do you do? I said, you use toilet paper. And they go, toilet paper? What are you talking about? Well, let's say your kid's 15, a little past this planet middle school year, but 15-year-old, and he's really getting mouthy, and the grades are bad, and you get 18 jointed pieces of toilet paper. I prefer two-ply. And just get him to sit down, look him eyeball to eyeball, and say, we need to talk real briefly. This will only take 2 minutes. If he's 15, tear 15 off individually for effect, and he's looking at you. Now you've got three toilet tissue that remain intact. He's going to think you're nuts.
Hmm.
Say, honey, you got three more years to live in this prison. And as you know, things are not going well. They're not going well on your end. They're sure not going well on our end. So I just want to make sure you understand where we're going with this. Three more years you're here, and on your 18th birthday, you're a free man. You're a free young woman. You can go do what you want to do. Because we're holding you back. You must have some grandiose plans and ideas for success in life. Something like that, it's a little in your face. But it just points out that, you know, if you think you're hanging around here till you're 24 and living off of mom and dad, you're wrong. You're either going to go in the service, or you're going to go out and get a job, or you're going to go to school. based on your schoolwork, I don't think it's going to be school. But some of those kids surprise you. But the point is, you call a spade and you move on. So the choice is, do you want to have a good 3 years left in this prison, or do you want to have it continue as it's going? It doesn't mean it's got to go the negative track. But at least you're telling the kid that decision is going to be theirs and not yours.
Well, those middle school years seem to go by very quickly. I'm already at the end of mine, and he'll start high school next year. And so I loved reading this book just to remind me of what I maybe could have done a little bit better and what I still have time to do. So I'm talking to Dr. Kevin Lehman today about his book, Planet Middle School. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about technology, how that's kind of put a crimp in the raising your children in this day and age. We'll talk about that and how to navigate through that as parents as well. Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm talking to Dr. Kevin Lehman today about his book, Planet Middle School. We're talking about how to navigate, how parents can navigate through those middle school years and maybe understand their children a little bit better, this alien body that's kind of taken up residence in our home. Dr. Lehman, one of the things that has changed quite a bit since I was a child and since you were a child, I'm guessing as well, is just this technology and how that's changed the way that we communicate and interact, not only in our homes, but to the outside world as well. How do we factor these things into parents who maybe didn't grow up with this technology? What do they need to learn and how do they need to understand their child better in order to navigate through it?
Well, I call it the new Goliath, and it clearly is a Goliath because it's come in with such force. And it permeates all of our lives. You walk into a restaurant, there's four men there, and the four men have their cell phones out, and they're looking at YouTube or whatever. My big problem is I think that parents will put those cell phones in kids' hands way too early. But if you think you're going to defeat technology as a parent, good luck. You just got to find some ways around it. I know adults who say, first one that pulls out their cell phone at dinner, buys dinner. There are ways, creative ways, you can do to make sure that kids check their cell phones at the dinner table, that they don't bring them there, those kind of things. With parents who've got kids who, are living on the edge a little too much, it's not unheard of to get cell phone passwords and keep abreast of what your kids are looking at on the internet. But as soon as you figure it out, I'm telling you, there is things like fake calculator and things like that that kids can get into where they can mask what they're really looking at. They can change the history of what their computers have looked at. So when you think you're really getting on top of it, parent, in the technology area, just remember this, good luck, because you're not going to get on top of it. You're not going to. It's moving at a warp speed. So I would spend more time talking about the relationship that you have with your kid. You know, Josh McDowell, a good friend over the years, he said one profound thing in his entire ministry, but it was so profound I stole it from him. And he said, rules without relationship lead to rebellion. And parents, especially parents of faith, love rules. But rules aren't going to do it. It's all about the relationship and trust and belief you have in each other as family. If you have that, the kids are not going to disappoint you. In fact, when they disappoint you or when they get outside of that place of normalcy, they get a little deviant, ask yourself, parent, are they going to feel good about themselves when they do that? No, they're not. Because you have trained them up right. You have taught them right from wrong. So I just think it's incumbent upon us, all of us, to realize that our words make a difference. Your words in the Bender family make a difference in your kids' lives. The expectations that you place upon them, the belief you put in them, will pay off.
Well, in fact, you listed a middle schooler's 10 commandments to parents, and I love number 3. It says, expect the best of me, trust me, and believe in me. Deep down, I really want to please you.
And that's one of the things we found at our Lehman Academy of Excellence, our school, that kids tend to live up to the expectations that we put on them, and we have high expectations for kids. And again, it's just, there's a one-to-one relationship between that expectation that I believe you can do it and not doing things for kids that they could do for themselves. We got parents who do homework for kids. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. If you want to discourage your kid, do their homework for them. That certainly isn't helping. So as people would tell you who work with families today, it's not just the kids, it's parents. Parents have changed a lot. They've become far too permissive recently.
Well, that's the reason for your book. It's going to be helpful for a lot of parents. I'm going to read the 10th middle schooler 10 commandment. It says, never forget how important you are to me. Even when I seemingly blow you off, I love you and need you in my life. So when our kids do blow us off, or it seems like it, how can a parent just stay encouraged that that is not the end?
Well, just assuming that they're weird. They're weird, Betty. They're absolutely weird. And just wait, because the same kid who seemingly wants to blow you off has a list of 4 things you could help them with within the hour. So it's just, you just have to know what you're dealing with. They're a very strange animal at that point in their life. They're neither here nor there. They're still little kids. They're growing up. They got a lot of pressure on them from a lot of different sources. But you want to give your kid the ability to say no to the peer group. And that only comes with experiences where you've been brave enough to say to them, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to go there. So you be an authority, parents, without being an authoritarian. That's your assignment for me today. It's a tough one because all of us grew up in an authoritarian home. So we were told things like, hey, you go and do what I tell you to do, as long as you live under this roof. Well, I got news for you. That's the authoritarian stance. But being an authority says, you know, God didn't put you on this earth to be walked over by your kid. So when the kid starts walking on you, you got to know how to respond and not just react.
Well, the book is called Planet Middle School. Dr. Kevin Lehman, thanks so much for writing it, for helping us parents navigate through this challenging time. I look forward to seeing when you write the book about how to navigate your students' college life, because I'm going to be in that phase pretty soon. So if you could start working on that, that would be really great.
Okay, I'm on it.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Lehman.
Hey,
and it's been a pleasure.
Okay, thanks so much.
You bet. Bye-bye. If you're listening today and you want to get a copy of Dr. Kevin Lehman's book, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and you'll be able to enter your name and your email address that way. We'll do a drawing at the end of the show so you can get your hands on that book. Again, it's called Planet Middle School, and of course, there are several other books that Dr. Lehman has written as well. Thanks so much for listening today to Connecting Faith, and have a great afternoon. It's all about